Welcome to our morning after version of the Saturday simulcast, joined by Brian Newbert and Tom Deanhart after Purdue's 28-26 homecoming victory over Florida Atlantic. We will break that game down and look ahead. We want to thank our sponsors, the Purdue Union Club Hotel, Boiler Up Bar, 811 Bistro, and all the things that you can enjoy. It was a great day for homecoming. I will say that after a full day of a lot of people walking around campus yesterday, you couldn't have found a better day for that. And a lot of folks who were at the Union yesterday for a while, and a lot of folks were running in and out and enjoying a day. First night homecoming game in Purdue history. Also, make sure that you like us on or subscribe to us on YouTube as well, and leave us a comment too if you have any on our YouTube broadcast, etc. So I'm going to start with you, Tom. Hard to be real inspired after last night, but the good thing is for Purdue, they did win, and that was in doubt till the last closing moments of the game, until Sanusi Kane snuck out with the football and ran a fumble down. Now, with the lens of 10 or so hours after it's over, what comes to mind?
Yeah, you know, I think you sort of referenced it for me, Alan. They found a way to finish.
Yeah.
And you hate to always bring up recent history, but just flash back to September 1st, the Penn State game. Purdue had a 31-28 lead. They had the ball not once, but twice. They couldn't, A, milk the clock, or B, add to their lead. And we all know how that game ended. Penn State ultimately went down and scored a winning touchdown with 57 seconds to go. But last night, similar scenario, right? Purdue had to punt the ball back to FAU and just a two-point lead. And this time the defense bowed its back, if you will. And you talked about it, Alan. Jacob Wahlberg forced the fumble by FAU quarterback Nicozi Perry. Sanusi Kane scooped it up. Game over. Exhale, wipe your brow, turn the page, and just be happy you got a win, right? We all can agree this was no thing of beauty. But given the circumstances, starting the quarterback who hadn't started a game since 2019, again, Purdue's happy to get out with a win. Guys, the coaches always say you'd rather be able to correct things coming off a win than a loss, and that's what Purdue's able to do. But again, boy, things get very interesting and very challenging moving forward, beginning next week at Minnesota, guys. Kicks off a month where 3 of the 4 games are on the road.
Yeah, Brian, I think from your perspective, too, it's hard to be real inspired, but you're right. Tom's right about it's better to win than lose. But it doesn't seem to be, and maybe I'm doing the week-to-week thing a little bit too much, didn't seem to be trending well. This is Purdue just not doing a lot of things. They did limit their penalties yesterday, but they still had a bad unsportsmanlike conduct penalty or personal foul. From your perspective, I know it's not all gloom and doom, because again, they won and there is opportunity in front, but Minnesota looked really good yesterday, and Purdue's going to have to find a way to be competitive, not only in that game, but really trying to run the gauntlet of October.
Yeah. You know, there wasn't a whole lot from that game yesterday that gave you a lot of what's the word I'd be looking for here? Confidence heading into Minnesota, who's obviously on a roll. I think that, you know, the personal foul thing, I thought that was kind of a bang bang play. I mean, I don't think all personal fouls are created equal. I thought the one last week was egregious. This one I thought was just kind of one of those things that happened. Still shouldn't have happened, but yeah, it did. So I don't know if I look at that as kind of that lack of discipline problem that we were talking about after the after the last game. But the biggest thing for me was that, I think as soon as Aiden O'Connell was ruled out, this became one of those games where you just kind of had to grind it out. You just had to kind of get the win and get out of here. But now that it's played out, I think that, you know, the offense – is one thing, but the defense is another. And I think going into Big Ten play again now, you look at that side of the ball and you see some real question marks here. I think there were times yesterday where Purdue looked really vulnerable against the run.
Yeah.
And that is extremely ominous, given that now you're going to start playing opponents where you have to play the game in the box, and all of a sudden the physical part of it becomes much more to the forefront. On top of that, there are real issues in that secondary as well. It seems like every game somebody gets behind Corey Trice deep. It seems like Purdue gives up a lot of big plays. It's been much discussed here that Purdue's playing a lot of one high safety, a lot of man, and I think there's some real vulnerabilities there. And if Purdue can't take away the run from Minnesota, which is going to be
hard to do,
a challenge this season, all of a sudden you're going to be on the end of a string again with the RPO stuff they like to do. And there's just going to be a lot of really difficult matchups that come with this Minnesota game, and not a lot of reason coming out of that game yesterday to think Purdue is, you know, up to it quite yet. As I said before, the Aiden O'Connell thing obviously is the most important context in this game, but I don't think Purdue's issues yesterday against Florida Atlantic were necessarily all tied to Aiden O'Connell. I think a lot of the concern coming out of this game has to lie with that defense.
Yeah, Austin Burton, certainly Tom had a serviceable game, did what he was supposed to, with Sands the one turnover. I know that happens, but thought he did do what he was supposed to do. Purdue ran the ball better. Let's look at some of the things that I don't know that it was a function of what they were facing defensively, but Dylan Downing had a good game. Devin Mockabee did a couple good things in the passing game, had a couple good runs as well. Do you take any of that forward? Knowing full well that we were going to do the song and dance this week as well with Aiden O'Connell, it appears. But that Purdue offense has got to generate enough. I agree with Brian. The defense is maybe the biggest problem, but the offense has got to get the job done up at Minneapolis.
Yeah, first, guys, this was Jeff Brohm's post-game quote when I asked him about Aiden O'Connell moving forward. He said, quote, "It could be next week, could be a couple of weeks, so we'll just play it by ear." So there you go. I did ask Jeff Brohm, too, when he got hurt. He said it was the first quarter
of
this year's game. So nonetheless, Austin Burton – like you said, I guess he was serviceable, guys. Just the one turnover, the pick, the three touchdown passes. Did it, I think it was 72% of his passes. And you know what was really missing, guys, was downfield passing. According to the StatCast, he was one of three passing 15 yards or longer, I think it was. And didn't take a lot of shots downfield. And overall, guys, just two big plays in the passing game, and one of them came from your running back, Devin Mockabee, had a 28-yard catch, which was the longest of the game for Purdue. So Purdue really missed that big play explosive element. In the passing game, you know, Charlie Jones, guys, didn't make his catches. He had 9, but they only went for 59 yards. We didn't see any of those big gainers for Charlie. So that was the one thing I noticed with having Austin Burton under center. Again, he did at least avoid, I guess, a catastrophic mistake, which is always a positive. So, we just have to wait and see on O'Connell's status. And, Alan, to your point about the ground game, Dylan Downing, yeah, my goodness. Longest run of the season, a 30-yarder. He had two or three other rushes for over 10. First 100-yard effort for a Boiler since Horvath in 2020. Devin Mockabee, guys, I mean, what more can we say? Let's go ahead and commission a statue, okay? It's like every week he's turning heads. This week, guys, it was as a pass catcher.
Yeah.
No. Jeff Brohm said in the postgame that is not one of his strengths, but Devin certainly looked like a good pass catcher to all of us who watched Saturday night. So that was another nice development too, guys. So, yeah, there were some fits and starts offensively, some long dry spells. But as you guys both alluded to, I think maybe more of the concern lies on the other side of the ball. And remember, they've been missing Jalen Graham. I'm not sure. I'm sure. I think he would have made a big difference at Syracuse. Sure, he would have helped last night. I'm not sure if he's going to be there when they get to the Twin Cities next week. We'll have to wait and see. So Purdue's going to have to get by with what they have. And also, guys, they were missing Reese Taylor yesterday, which hurt their depth at cornerback as well.
Yeah. Inability, Brian, to get a different type of offense in Florida Atlantic, very mobile at quarterback and guy that can move around and cause Purdue some problems, but not a lot of pressure. I don't, did they have a sack? Did Purdue have a sack yesterday? No. All ties together, I guess, is that you're just going to have to play. You got Tanner Morgan had a Purdue-esque game yesterday against Michigan State. What was he, 21 for 23, which is one better than he was, one worse than he was against Purdue back in 2019 or whenever that game was. Again, all kinds of challenges. And it's college football, and it's the best of times. It's the worst of times, and maybe – Purdue has responded somewhat well in some of these situations in the past under Jeff Brom. But I still, it's stating the obvious, it seems to me, Brian, you got to have Aiden O'Connell back, and you probably have to have Jalen Graham back sooner than later if you're going to do the kind of things that you want to do in, with this team. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I don't think Purdue's issues lied as much on offense last night as they did on defense. I don't know how big of a difference Jalen Graham would have made last night. Probably significant. I mean, he's their best defensive player.
Yeah.
But that's where, the Minnesota matchup is a little bit foreboding here, is that if you can't stop the run between the tackles, Big Ten style, and, Jeff Brom has made some comments this season kind of looking ahead to when the game changes, when you start playing the Minnesotas and Wisconsins and Iowa's and whatnot, where it comes down to, being in the box and all of a sudden you have to play bigger personnel and, things like that. That's where things can get a little bit dicey here for Purdue. Maybe that's not what he suggested, but that's kind of what I'm suggesting right now. If you can't control that running game right away, Tanner Morgan's got you on a string. And we saw a couple of years ago what he was able to do with all those RPO passes. It's going to be really hard to get to the quarterback if you have to respect that really – distinct threat that their running game could pose. I think Purdue did some good things offensively with Austin Burton. I think it's a very different offense than it would have been with Aiden O'Connell, but I think it was a good kind of different. I think it was a more balanced offense. It could be a little bit more, kind of ball control to a certain extent, a lot of quick throws, a lot of easy completions. I think hitting FAU with that early option, I think probably stretched out their front a little bit and allowed some of the holes that they exposed, later in the game. I think a lot of their running success, some of their running success yesterday was a little bit schematic. Part of it was just the reality of a Big Ten opponent playing against a, low to mid-major opponent. But Purdue just has to be really physical and really disciplined, against Minnesota and from here on out in with the rest of this Big Ten schedule in order for this to not, go a different direction than they want it to go in, I think.
Yeah. Environment last night, Tom, a night game, obviously, for homecoming the first time. Jerry Palm and the alumni band out there yesterday. I thought I was really impressed with the student crowd, just shoulder to shoulder again on a now they weren't all there after halftime, I get it, but it was a perfect night for football. But you have another 55,000 people in Florida Atlantic, doesn't bring anybody, so they didn't really benefit from there. There were some empty seats probably because of that, but it's still the environment. The interest is good there. You got to find some things to inspire you down the road and hope that you can make some kind of run. And I suppose Purdue would be an Iowa type win, I would think, almost. I know Minnesota's not going to be ranked second going into this weekend, but they probably will be ranked this week, I would think. And that will be a big upset if Purdue can get the job done. But you have to admit the fan base, even after a kind of a challenging start, to say the least, this season, showed up big time last night for homecoming. The Nebraska game's already sold out. Those kind of things are still happening.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice crowd, Alan. You're right. The weather was picture perfect. It would have really been good to kick off at noon, right? Boy, the sun was brilliant. But it was a nice night for football in late September, early fall. And three of the four games this month were at home. Again, next month, three out of four on the road, guys. Purdue's 2-2. Again, at Minnesota, at Maryland, Nebraska at home. And then at Wisconsin, then Purdue's off the last week of the month of October. I mean, Purdue could be 3-5 when we get to November. Maybe 4-4. I mean, it's going to be a rough month. We know the challenges that loom at Minnesota, guys. Purdue has yet to win a game at what is now Huntington Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. I think that opened up in 2009. They've never won in that, quote, new Minnesota venue. P.J. Fleck has won the last four against Jeff Brohm. He's been a tormentor to Jeff Brohm. We all know what happened in 2019 at Rossage Stadium. On and on it goes. I don't want to relive the Minnesota-Purdue issues for the Boilermakers, but big challenges there, guys. Maryland's playing good football. They had their first loss of the year, but they certainly acquitted themselves very well at Michigan. Then Nebraska at home, like you talked about, Alan, the only home game in October. They're already circling the drain. And then you go to Wisconsin. I know the Badgers look like they have their issues, but we know Purdue's history with Wisconsin too. So guess what I'm trying to say in a very high word volume way is October is going to be tough and it's going to be defining. I think it's going to be the month that makes or breaks Purdue's season. Let's hope they get healthy. Because you'd like to turn the corner of that month, at least 4-4, guys. That means you need to split the month of November just to get to 6 wins. And that's the friendly month if you're a Purdue fan, right? You got Iowa at home, at Illinois, Northwestern at home, and at Indiana. So, again, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but October, my goodness, this is going to be the month that I think really tells us all we need to know about Purdue and the direction of this 2022 season.
Yeah, last word, Brian, on of course, looking around the landscape of the Big Ten, Iowa did beat the State University of New Jersey, aka Rutgers, pretty handily. I didn't get a chance to see much of that game. Ohio State whips up on Wisconsin. I mean, there's only how many Big Ten are in the West Division that have wins now? It's Northwestern and Minnesota, right? And that's that have conference wins, I should say. So Purdue's not that far behind, but it's probably safe to say that you don't want to start talking about Big Ten West championships just yet. Purdue's got to find a way to compete next week.
Yeah, no, you can't talk about Big Ten West championships until Purdue shows it can be much, much better than it's been.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm with you.
Much better. You know, Purdue's got to get through some things here. They got to get – while I thought Purdue did some good things yesterday with Austin Burton, I think your upside is considerably lower without Aiden O'Connell. I think O'Connell gives you that opportunity to, you know, put up 35, 40 points against a lot of people, even though Purdue hasn't done that. You know, Purdue's got to find some ways to get some more points on the board too, you know. Some of the big play stuff that they used to be able to create via, you know, trick plays, whatever you want to call it, that stuff hasn't really been there this year. And I think you've played a bunch of games here this year where if you could have just get one more touchdown in the first half, or you could just steal one more touchdown somewhere along the line, you're talking about entirely different games. And back in 2017, 2018, you know, they used to be able to do that every week. And I think a lot of what they've done, you know, from a creative perspective this season has not worked. You know, part of that is not being able to run the ball the way you'd prefer to be able to run the ball, last night being one exception. I think trick plays and creative stuff work better when defenses are on their heels because your base stuff is working so well. And that's probably one area we're not having maybe that bread and butter stuff clicking all the time, you know, probably holds them back a little bit. But Purdue's an offensive program, and that's kind of their thing. And no matter who's at quarterback, they got to find some ways to just get a little bit of cushion on the scoreboard at some point. You're playing all these super close games here, and you're allowing one mistake to, you know, be outsized. You're allowing that one mistake your quarterback has made the last two second halves to matter way more than it would have had you been able to get, you know, more than two touchdowns on the board in the first half of the games, things like that. Purdue's got some real flaws here, and I think part of the solution is just kind of scoring your way out of it any way you can. It's not going to be easy against Minnesota. It's not going to be easy against anyone the rest of the way.
That's what I agree.
But I think that's kind of what's got to happen here. You also, I think at some point we should mention too, you know, 2 weeks in a row now, Mitchell Finneran's missed the second half kick that would have been very important. Last year, confidence became kind of a real concern around him, as I remember it correctly. Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of one of your known commodities. That was one of the things Purdue came into the season viewing as, here's a luxury and advantage we have every single week. And now if there are some issues there, that's one more layer of kind of concern here for Purdue moving forward. You'd like to score touchdowns and not field goals, but you need to get those field goals when you have to kick those.
Yeah, and he was not close last night. That's kind of on the far end of his range that he's shown so far at Purdue. But yeah,
wasn't a gimme by any means. I think
47 yards. He's never hit. What's his longest kick anyway? 42.
It's 49 against Oregon State. It's very.
Oh, he did. First game. Oh, he did hit a 49er.
He started out real hot last year, hit his first 8 or 9 kicks and hit that midseason funk, went about 1 of 5, 1 of 6.
Yeah.
And he hit like 14 of his last 15 to finish the year. So
I'd forgotten the 49 yard.
I know the defense had its struggles. But again, they made two other key plays at least when they had to. Cam Allen's interception of the 2-point conversion, it was 28-26. Huge, right? Preserves Purdue's lead. And then before that, with Purdue winning 21-20, FAU was on the march, and that's when Chris Jefferson picked off a pass deep in Purdue territory. Purdue subsequently scored to take, I think it was a 28-20 lead. So, yeah, again, there were plenty to work on for Purdue. I'm sure they're breaking down the film as we speak. But at key points, at least they did make some key stops and bowed their back and kept the team in the ball game. So. Yeah, you could use more of that moving forward. Like you said, there's plenty for this squad to continue to hone on both sides of the ball, even special teams.
Yeah, the 2-point conversion was a horrible throw. As my high school football coach would have said, he threw the ball straight to Pete Moss. He threw it right to the grass. And, you know, kudos to Cam Allen for making the interception. But had he not, it would have just gone right into the grass. Jacob Wahlberg made a great play on Chris Jefferson's other interception.
He had a big day too. Led the team in tackles.
Great day, yeah. And they're going to need those big physical linebackers against Minnesota because this is their time now. The Kieran Douglases of the world, the Samisi Fakasikis, the Wahlbergs. This is their time now, and we'll see what Purdue has there. But you know, some of the mistakes that Florida Atlantic made. Do they want to be called Florida Atlantic, or are they trying to move away from that? Are they doing
FAU? I don't know. You see FAU everywhere on their bus.
FAU, Florida Atlantic, whatever you want to call them. Some of the mistakes they made offensively yesterday, I think that you don't necessarily expect Tanner Morgan to make this week.
Yeah.
Now, I don't say that to take away from what Purdue's defense did yesterday in terms of the key turnovers they got and the key stops they got when they got them. But I think the degree of difficulty is going to increase considerably from here on out.
That is a true statement. All right. On that note, we thank you all for watching, listening, however you process our fine information. Thank Tom Dienhart and Brian Newbert as well. It will be Purdue at Minnesota noon kick. We'll find out. I think the Maryland start time hasn't been determined yet. And, of course, the Nebraska, when they come back to West Lafayette, we'll know that in about 10 days as well. So that will be a storyline. But noon, 11 o'clock, maybe the Gophers will be asleep after coming at that early start up in Minneapolis. All right, guys, thanks so much. I want to thank the Union Club Hotel, 811 Bistro, Boiler Up Bar, and we appreciate them. We'll see you next week on our Saturday simulcast.
One more thing about the Minnesota game. At least it's not going to be 4 degrees.
Yeah. No, it's going to be warm. 75 degrees, we're talking about.
Really?
Yeah, that's what, at least the early forecast. You know, that's the thing about this. We can't put an end to this Zoomcast. We just keep bringing stuff in. And good information. As I understand, it's going to be over 70 degrees.
Thank God for flip-flops.
Yeah, Brian, appreciate the info. All right, thanks again. All right, guys.